will it take me under?
Welcome to Woke History. I'm your host, Dr. Joshua K. Wright. I'm a college history professor in Washington, D.C. Woke History is a new podcast series that features lively conversations with guests focusing on historical and contemporary issues of race, gender, political activism, and culture that are often ignored in most high school classrooms and social studies textbooks. Guests will include a wide range of individuals from scholars and community activists, professional athletes, media personalities, and others. Today's guest is the Emmy Award-winning and NAACP Image Award-winning host, Jeannie Mai. You can see her each weekday on the nationally syndicated talk show, The Real, and on ABC's hit summer series, Holy Moly. She was a contestant on the most recent season of ABC's Dancing with the Stars. She also hosts an online series on Facebook and YouTube called Hello Honey and a podcast called Listen Honey. At age 18, Jeannie launched her career as a makeup artist for MAC Cosmetics. As a trainer, she worked her way from face to face until she was eventually traveling the world to work for celebrities such as Christina Aguilera and Alicia Keys. Her first big break on television came in 2003 when she was hired to co-host the Asian American magazine style show, Stir, on the International Channel. Today, she's one of the leading Asian American celebrities in Hollywood. Let's begin our conversation. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm here with the amazing Jeannie Mai. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Hi, I'm so happy to be here. Thank you for having me, Josh.
Hey, so before we get started with the questions, I know you're competing in the new season of Dancing with the Stars, and I've been dying to ask you this question. Who do you foresee as your biggest competition?
Man, I mean, young Swivel over there makes a lot of noise. I don't know, that guy. I'm just kidding. No, Nelly is so, he's good. I think there's so many talented people. I can't pick one. Every week I've got my eyes on somebody new. Justina's killing it. Vernon, I mean, with Nelly, of course, is so much fun to watch.
Yeah.
There's a lot of good people, man. I got to keep my eyes on the road. For me, if I want to make it past every competition, I just got to make sure my own toes are landing in the right place, you know?
So one of the aspects that I love about your show, The Real, is that it highlights women of color on daytime television in a unique way. You have three Black women, a Latina, there's yourself. Yeah. Were all of you aware when you started the series back in 2013 that you would be trailblazers in what you're doing?
Well, thank you. You know, I can't speak for the ladies, but for me, I still think we got so much work to do. You know, as much as I'm thankful for Fox and Telepictures to recognize the need for a show like this, we still have a lot of work. I mean, there's just because, you know, we get an Emmy doesn't mean there's so many more topics to discuss and parts of our lives to share and be vulnerable about. Mm-hmm. So I am appreciative of every life that we touch, but I feel like there's so much more work to be done, especially since 2020 has been a hot mess. There's so many things to talk about and to grow and evolve from, you know?
Yeah. Do you have many fans who come up to you and just say thank you for kind of like being the voice for me and expressing my feelings?
That is definitely one of the coolest things about my job. You know, I could be literally at a gas station. People will walk up and remember specific episodes and discussions. So yes, it's very humbling. Mm-hmm. And it makes you just remember that you are speaking for other voices out there. Like it makes you remember that it's not just me airing out my own opinion. It's Debbie sitting on the couch. It's Melinda who felt that word, you know? So I always think the segment's not long enough to be able to really exhaust some of the things that I have grown from, like divorce, you know, or eating disorders, or failure, you know, there's so much to cover. So yes, when somebody latches on or something, somebody felt touched by something Adrian said or something Lonnie said, I that's when we're doing the work.
You mentioned, 2020 and what a crazy year it's definitely been. So, you know, during the early months of the pandemic in the quarantine, like a lot of people, I was at home binge watching various TV shows and movies. And one of the documentaries that I had a chance to sit down and watch was this ESPN film, Be Water, which tells the story of Bruce Lee and his struggles to overcome racism in Hollywood as an Asian American actor during the 1960s. So in your opinion, how much progress has been made in Hollywood, and have you ever experienced any discrimination in the industry yourself?
Absolutely. Your first question, how much work, how much improvement has been made? Not enough, not enough. I mean, I'm the only Vietnamese woman in television. That's lonely as hell. That's not something I'm proud of. There's so many talented Asian voices, Vietnamese voices, but the job always goes to, I think, you know, the face that is more favorable to sell things or that feels like it is the safest, you know? And the fact that we just had a hashtag running Oscar So White just a minute ago, I mean, after it blows off, you know, is it still going to stay that way, the diversity that's necessary, or is it a trend? You know, right now, we're seeing a surge of Black representation in different companies and networks, but did it really take all of that in 2020 to get that? You know what I'm saying? So no, I think until we don't have to go to BET to see Black faces, and you don't have to go just to, you know, certain networks to see that representation, and you can see it across the board look as diverse as it does when you walk out of your home, then we've done the work. But no, there's a lot of work to be done. So for me, over here on my lone Asian island, I just saw recently that on my girl Adrian Houghton's show, I Can See Your Voice on Fox, they hired Ken Jeong, which is awesome, as the lead host of that, you know. So we just want to see more responsibility to be diverse, which is why calling companies out and holding them accountable is absolutely necessary.
When you mentioned the Oscar So White campaign, and I know a lot of that was dealing with African-American actors and films, but when you see things happening within that in the Black community, does that trickle down to the Asian-American community as well?
Absolutely. I think that for minorities, we all share the understanding of not being represented. However, my pain, you know, to understand and to constantly learn goes out to my Black brothers and sisters when it comes to a different form of racism that is unfathomable. You know, let's just be real. I don't have to worry about walking out of my house and I don't have to worry about a cop kneeling on my neck. You know, I don't have to worry about my Asian brother getting killed if he gets pulled over. You know, it's a very different tension towards my Black friends and family, the Black community out there. So I need to constantly learn and understand, because I will never understand what it's like to be in Black skin, never. So my job is to learn and to listen and to do everything I can to use my voice to speak for the Black community, but also to support, to make way, to step aside where Black voices need to be represented. And then also do my job just as being Jeannie Mai to represent for my Asian community.
Yeah, do you think that within the next 5 to 10 years, we'll see, you know, a day where it's multiple TV shows and multiple films and theaters that are dealing with Asian Americans and telling their stories?
I think the first step that has to happen is to empower talented, diverse faces with the roles that can make those executive decisions. Mm-hmm. I don't think the white guys at the top are going to be thinking, oh, we need to fill this role with a Latina face or an Asian face or a Black face. No, it takes the actual person in power to go, you know what? This is looking real white around here. Mm-hmm. Like, it really does take that. So first step is to have more roles with a diverse background to make those decisions. And then the second thing is for us to continue to speak up for movements like Oscar So White, for the people to call it as they see it when the representation isn't being had and we're holding these award ceremonies that honor so many talented faces out there that all look the same. You know, I'm not saying that white people are less talented, but we need to make sure that we recognize why, if the award show is filled with so many white faces, why is that? You know, we have to go all the way down to the base level to see at the auditions, are there diverse, are the auditions being held in a way that reflects diversity? You know, are the jobs that are being booked a way that reflects diversity? We know way too many times in history already where a Caucasian person was playing the role of a person of ethnicity. Mm-hmm. Why? Yeah. Why is that? So there's a lot of room to grow, and I don't know if it's going to happen in the next few years, but I will say I'm thankful for small productions that kick off their own show that they see needed, whether it's, you know, shows on YouTube, shows on, you know, Quibi, these personal shows that are like, you know what, screw the big conglomerates that are not doing the job. Let me speak up. Like, that's why I started my own YouTube show, Hello Hanae. Hello Hanae is a story about me and my Asian cultures, my Asian family, and the blending of my love life and the blending of what I need to learn and how I fight for my own name to shine out there. So if it weren't for that, you flip the channel for as long as you want. You may not find the show about an Asian girl in her life. You know, so I constantly encourage people who feel like they have a story to tell to go and find the ways and the people to go make that story yourself. Because if you sit there waiting for that big name in lights to call on you, it might not happen. Might be you making that yourself. And I think that that's what happened for people like Lily Singh, a beautiful Asian face who had her own YouTube show that blew up. And now she has her own nighttime talk show because a network found that her numbers resonated and could have her own talk show. Liza Koshy is another one who has an amazing show on Netflix now, but started out as a YouTuber. So there's great talent out there, but you might have to start it yourself.
You know, I'm glad you mentioned the show Hello Hanae that you do, and I've been watching episodes on YouTube, and they're really funny. Like, I love your mom; she's just the cutest. and your dad is funny. Your dad's pretty funny. So I was watching the episode. I think this one's a little old, but this episode about him having this secret girlfriend, and your brother, that I think, part. Like saw him out with her, and it was kind of awkward. It was so funny. But I'm bringing that up though, right? Because what I noticed about you and your mom when you guys are together, you both seem very outspoken, very extroverted. And I actually heard you in a previous interview say that you were more of an introvert, but at least watching you guys together, you seem very outspoken and very extroverted. And I bring this up because my dentist that I've been going to for a few years now, he's a Chinese American in his mid-50s. Okay. Loves to talk. I think whenever I visit him, he spends more time talking to me than he does actually cleaning my teeth. But he was telling me this story recently about how, you know, when he was growing up, his parents taught him that if he wanted to get ahead, that he needed to be somewhat docile, non-confrontational, because as Asian American, you know, a lot of times he would be the only person who looked like him in a lot of settings. So he didn't want to be the one who was always complaining about this and complaining about that. And that's helped him to get along. And, you know, like in my readings and in my research, I've heard about this term called the model minority. That says the Asians are supposed to be the model minority. And what that means is that they're not like the Blacks. They're not like the Latinos speaking out and complaining. And I just wanted to know, when you were a kid growing up, was that philosophy pushed at all in your household, or were you guys totally against that?
The model minority myth is used as a racial wedge between Asians and Blacks. It's a very, 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 very dangerous term to use, because the terminology, first of all, was created by white people. And when you pit two races together and you build one up as the more ideal group, I mean, I equate it to, I was actually explaining it to my mom. If you have two siblings, right? Let's say two brothers in a household, and one constantly gets the praise for getting better grades and for being the cleaner kid in the household and always, you know, doing their chores and never getting in trouble. Not only are you downplaying the efforts of the other sibling, but you're also creating a tension between the two siblings that can be very dangerous as far as being brothers, being brethrens, and being a family, a unit that applaud one another. Mm-hmm. So the model minority did just that towards Asians. And not only was it something that we didn't ask for that created this spotlight put on us that made us look like we were the minority that should have, that should echo what all minorities should do, but also I'm going to say straight up, there's people within the Asian community, Asians themselves, that started sipping their own Kool-Aid and mm-hmm. began superiorizing themselves mm-hmm. and buying into it. Just like that sibling example I just gave, there might be the one that's getting praised might start to look at it like, I am the perfect example. Why can't everybody be like me? And begin carrying themselves in a way that is not what our community needs. It's not the representation of a unitedness. And so I do see that in the Asian community, and it does begin to build into something that could be like the anti-blackness that's inside of our communities. So yes, it's a terrible, terrible thought, and it hurts all of us. The model minority stereotype creates inequality for everyone.
Yeah, actually, you know, as you were talking, it made me think about the Spike Lee film, Do the Right Thing. And there's this scene in the movie where Spike Lee's character Mookie throws the trash can through Sal's pizzeria and like a riot breaks out. And I think there was a Asian owned store nearby in that community and they're about to attack his place. And he's like, me color too, or me black too. And it's like, hey, you know, he's kind of saying, you know, we're all together. Don't look at me as different. Like I'm not the enemy here, you know? But I think like you're saying, because of this myth that you've had that tension between blacks and people of Asian descent, you know, that's, it shouldn't be there. We should all, you know, be working together, trying to uplift each other.
Absolutely. We have to be very careful to create a sense of empathy and equality within all of the minorities, because we all know what the struggle feels like. And we all need to band together to cover our brothers and sisters that are suffering, you know? So, I mean, a beautiful way of seeing this was seeing this unity is to learn more about the Yellow Panther movement and an organization that existed in Oakland. Malcolm X had a wonderful bond that was very prevalent in the Bay Area that I believe led to why we have such a great unity of different races in the Bay Area today, because of what took place between the Black and the Asian communities fighting for one another and marching for one another. You know, Yuri Kochiyama and Malcolm X really gave us a look of what it looked like to have races come together to support and to stand for one another in solidarity. And because of that, what unearthed is years and years of a community in the Bay Area that celebrates Black culture, that honors Black culture. You got Asians doing some of the best breakdancing in the entire damn world. And you've got Black people, you know, eating loving pho and foods from my culture, dining in Asian foods. You've got, you know, neighborhoods that are rich in ethnicity and mom and pop restaurants. And it's not unheard of to have a rich, diverse circle of friends because of that visibility to see minorities stand up for each other. We need more things like that.
So I know you were born and raised in San Jose, California.
Yep.
But your parents are Vietnamese and Chinese.
Yes.
And it made me think about this scene from the movie Crazy Rich Asians, where you had the protagonist, Rachel Chu, who's from America, and then she visits her boyfriend Nick's family in Singapore, and they get on her saying that, hey, she's not real Chinese because she didn't grow up here in Asia. Did you ever experience anything like that? Because I know you travel back to, you know, your parents' homeland and you do work overseas in Asia a lot. Do you ever experience that from folks saying, hey, you're not really one of us?
The thing is, I think the term that is pretty derogatory, but it's used a lot, is called whitewashed. Okay. When you are quote unquote whitewashed from being truly Asian. And I think that can fall under the categories of you don't speak your native language, or you can't eat the hot sauce or the crazy foods that Asian cuisine can have, or you have a very dominant group of Caucasian friends instead of your own people, from whatever. It could be from not speaking my language well to having too many friends that are not all Asian. But the truth is, I'm pretty well spread. Or if you know me well, not only do I have Asian representation all the way around me, from my whole glam is Asian, and it's not, it just is because it is. Like, I don't know what it is. It just happens to be that I, you know, a friend of a friend of a friend will recommend people, and if they're talented, yo, they're on. But I also obviously am in an interracial relationship. I have friends of every single race, from Hmong to Cambodian to Pakistanian to Kenyan. Like, so, you know, there's so many different groups of friends I have. So I've never really been pinned with the name whitewash, but I've always been asked if I'm Asian enough. Mm-hmm. And to me, to what I say to that is the fact that I wear my culture on my sleeve and on my armor every single day. And that is not through, it doesn't always have to be through things that visibly you guys have to see out there. It might be the conversations I have with my partner to explain to him why it's important to recognize how my parents immigrated here from Vietnam to run away from the politics there to survive. You know, it also might take me learning how to cook pho from my mom so that I can stop, you know, microwaving all these dinners that I get from the store and actually learn how to cook my own people's food. It might be in a heated chat on Girl Chat on The Real. It might be bringing in my Asian perspective of how my parents raised me rather than maybe what is popular out there on the blogs. It comes in little ways. But the thing is, I don't forget where I came from. And so I think the important thing to recognize is, for people out there, it's not our job to judge how blank somebody is. Because it runs in Black communities too. How Black is that person? You know, we've canceled that person because they're not Black enough. We're not. I don't even know what that means. So for me, in Asian culture, I know that to each individual, it's important to celebrate your culture. It's important to keep yourself abreast of what our culture needs as far as support. We first-gen Americans, are the voices of change. We are the ones to break out of the generational curses or the old school ways of thinking. We're the ones to go out there and use social media to empower our culture and to make changes. You know, our parents were on the struggle bus to get here, so we don't have to stay there. We need to go and use our English speaking voices and our power through what we know we have access to out here as an American citizen to make those changes. So I think the most important thing is to not forget your kind, but whether or not that person is Asian enough, that's not for debate.
Okay, so one of the things that, you know, I really appreciate about you is how you use your platform to, you know, shine a light on a number of issues. And I'm just going to kind of run through a few for our listening audience who might not be aware of it. So you highlight Black-owned businesses by hosting shopping halls on your YouTube series. You serve as a board member for various organizations, including Dress for Success and Same Sky, which elevates the business potential for women. There was an essay you published in People earlier this year when Asian Americans were being unfairly targeted and stereotyped. And you had this quote that really stood out. You said, hate will get you sick even if the virus doesn't. You know, when you're referring to COVID-19 and blaming people of Asian descent for that particular virus spreading. And then another thing that you're extremely passionate about and you're a strong advocate for is ending human trafficking. And I know you've done a documentary and you have another project. Can you just talk about that in terms of what you're doing with human trafficking?
Of course. So I became an advocate to fight for the freedom of victims of trafficking maybe about close to 15 years ago. And the original base of why I do this work is important to understand, because I'm a victim of sexual abuse. And my freedom was robbed from me when I was 9 years old. And it took my whole life till today to really find my voice and to really define what freedom means for me. Now, that was one incident within my family with an untrustworthy family member. I cannot imagine the trauma and the mental lasting effects on these victims of sex trafficking that go through coercion, manipulation, very inhumane torturing. And the crazy thing is, when I started my advocacy, trafficking was the fourth largest form of dark crime. And today it's the second. Mm-hmm. It's right after drugs. Drugs are the first largest exchange of dark crime, and the second is human bodies. Mm-hmm. So at this very moment, as we speak, human bodies are being sold as sex slaves. They're being mm-hmm. sold for labor. They're being traded for organs. It's a massive business out there, because the human body is so alive. It's so alive. Whether a woman is being forced to have babies to sell, she can also turn around and clean your house and also work at a nail salon. Mm-hmm. Like, there's so many ways that a person can be used, and women and children make up 60% of the trafficking industry. The trafficking industry alone is about $150 billion industry. Mm-hmm. So it's not going anywhere until we start to crack down and place the support and the fight we need to stop it. And really, it comes down to the people. So even though I'm thankful for documentaries that are giving you one side of what trafficking looks like, from Jeffrey Epstein to R. Kelly, mm-hmm. you know, it's so much more common and darker, you know? Mm-hmm. So our first film, called Stopping Traffic, I joined forces with these amazing female filmmakers from the Sadiatin Retreat. And we created a film that explained what exactly trafficking is and the number of ways that you can step up to fight. Now we are in production of our second documentary, Stopping Traffic 2. And this is specifically about the life of a trafficker, how they get out, if they can, the 2% that manages to survive, and why it's so important to provide the support that victims need in order to even make it. I'm just very proud of this next documentary that's going to come out. I think everybody should follow Stopping Traffic on Instagram so you can learn more of the hard work of Anabuti and Sadali, who are amazing monks that are behind this. Mm. And it's I'm very excited for 2021 when it comes out. Correct that. I think it's coming out 2022.
Well, thank you so much. This has been an awesome, fantastic interview. Ladies and gentlemen, once again, this was the amazing Jeannie Mai. You can see her on The Real. You can see her on Dancing with the Stars. Look out for her new documentary. It's coming out in 2022, and just all her YouTube series and all the amazing things that she's doing. So thank you so much, Jeannie.
Gosh, thank you for such thoughtful questions. I really enjoyed our time.
And that's our show for the week. Special thanks to today's guest, Jeannie Mai, and thanks to the listening audience. If you like what you heard, please check out future episodes. A special shout out, as always, to Uncle Phil and Aunt Viv. Have a blessed day.